listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Last show was a rather long one, but I really wanted to get my thoughts, my opinions out there, because what we're talking about is the safety, the security of not only me, but you, your family, your loved ones, your property, as well as the men and women that serve abroad in our armed forces and the first responders, the police, the firemen, the medics, because we're at war. And President Obama doesn't want you to know who the enemy is. That's why he still won't say Donald Trump's three words, radical Islamic terrorist. He said two, not three. He won't put that in a sentence. And he still denies that Islam has anything to do with this. We have a president that's delusional, clueless. No, I don't really think he's delusional or clueless. He's lying to you because he doesn't want you to know the truth. He doesn't want you to know who our enemies are and what they're about and what they're trying to do. I don't know if he's Muslim or not. I frankly don't care. I'm praying to the day he's no longer in office. And at least now, the only choice I have is Donald Trump. I would never vote or even consider Hillary Clinton, because I think she's equally as bad, if not worse, because she has been corrupted by the enemies of the United States and the countries that have given to her campaign, and the citizens of those countries are expecting something from her, and it's a continuation of the denial of what's behind this, and it's radical Islam. And what they're about is the establishment of a caliphate worldwide, first in one country, but spreading across the globe. And I know many of you, including me, say, well, that'll never happen. Well, it might never happen. I hope it never happens. And if the American people wake up to the threat and know the enemy, it won't happen. I don't believe in a deterministic future. I'm not a Marxist-Leninist. I think this president is, and Hillary Clinton is. They both were students in the sense of followers of Saul Alinsky, a radical communist that believed in activism, organizing the community. But that's a subject of another show. I really want to continue starting off playing what a jihadist is. You see, I think I understand why Donald Trump made it simple and described them as radical Islamic terrorists, including the shooter in Orlando. But he left out the word jihadist, and you need to understand what a jihadist is. So rather than me try to explain it, because I'm a Christian, I believe in God, but I do not believe in Islam at all. And Allah is God. So we have something in common, we do believe in God, but I do not believe in Islam and consider it as a potentially very violent, dangerous religion and a threat to the safety and the security of the American people. That's what Barack Obama doesn't want you to understand. Let me play. I'm debating which one to play. I have too many choices here. I'm going to the last show notes, by the way, and it has a lot of information, and I'm not apologizing for it. I give you this information as pointers or references to additional information so you make up your own mind. I really, truly, and some people don't believe this, I don't care whether you agree or disagree with me, but I think you need to make an informed decision, and ignorance is not an excuse. Let me play briefly, because this has been the news, but it needs to be replayed. Because towards the end of the last show, I made the point. I played Robert Spencer, and he was going through the Quran and citing chapter and verse as to what Muslims believe. And I made a point that regarding Orlando, because it was a gay nightclub frequented by gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgenders, what the people of Islam believe. And this is a speaker that the Orlando mosque had, and he was asked about homosexuals. Listen to this.
Death is the sentence. I mean, look, there's nothing to be embarrassed about this. That death is the sentence.
In case you didn't hear it, because he was very low spoken, death is the sentence if you're a homosexual. And ladies and gentlemen, you better believe that. If you are caught engaged in homosexual activity in Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and many other Islamic countries, death is the sentence. So it's very difficult. They don't have pulse nightclubs in those countries, but they do have very public executions. They don't have a homosexual problem because they've executed them. Now, the irony is, many Muslims are homosexuals. They have issues with their sexual identity, as do a lot of people. But if you're caught or even act out, not really caught in the act, but are suspected of being a homosexual, you could go to prison, be tortured. If they believe you've engaged in it and they have evidence, they will hang you. If you're in Iran, they will cut your head off in Saudi Arabia. In the Islamic State, they'll throw you off a roof or stone you if they don't have one high enough. They don't mess around. And there's some Christians that have that same view, and they can't get away with it in the United States. But a radical Islamist did in Orlando. And he, based on news reports, might have been a homosexual. He had some issues, and the news is emphasizing this. But what really should be emphasized is, what's the connection here? What's the common denominator? And it's Islam. And it's not all practitioners or believers in Islam. It's a minority. But the minority is so large in terms of numbers, probably at least the size of the U.S. population of 320 million. And that's probably a conservative number. You need to understand that. And I think the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community are finally waking up to the fact that even though Hillary Clinton professes to be friends with that group, as does Barack Obama, they're backers and supporters of Islam, and denying that we have a problem here, or denying who the enemy is, potentially puts them, it really puts all Americans' lives at danger, but in particular, people that are homosexuals. This club was not picked at random, not by a long shot, and apparently he's also considering Disney World. Now, I want to play a tape clip. It's rather short, but it's not Robert Spencer. I forget the gentleman's name, but he's an expert on jihad. Let me play it for you, because you need to understand what jihad is about, and there are different types. Let me play it.
Islam can be a little confusing. You meet a Muslim at the grocery store, nicest person in the world, cute kids, loves America. Later that day, you turn on your television and, wait a minute, some other Muslim just blew up the grocery store. What's going on here? Who represents Islam? The peaceful Muslim buying tomatoes or the violent Muslim bombing tomatoes? You'd like an answer, so you open up the Quran. You read Surah 2, 256. There is no compulsion in religion. That sounds peaceful and tolerant. I guess the peaceful Muslims are the true followers of Islam. Then you go to Surah 929. Fight those who do not believe in Allah. That's not nice. Now it seems like the violent Muslims got it right. The evidence points in different directions, so what are you supposed to believe?
Partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't.
If you've ever wondered why there are both peaceful and violent passages in the Quran, if it's ever bothered you that Muslims demand religious tolerance in the West while Christians and Jews can't build churches or synagogues in Saudi Arabia, if you've never quite grasped why organizations like CARE or ISNA claim that Islam is a religion of peace while they support terrorism behind the scenes, welcome to the most important video you'll ever watch. You can't understand Islam in the world today without understanding one essential fact. Jihad proceeds in stages. As the tiny tadpole grows into the bellowing bullfrog, as the lowly acorn becomes the mighty oak, as adorable parent trap Lindsay Lohan transforms into whatever she is now, so also the tolerant toddler of peaceful Islam eventually goes through puberty. That's when we all find out what full-grown, Jew-hating, church-burning, wife-beating, apostate-killing, Allahu Akbar-yelling Islam is really like in all its blood-spattered glory. Whether you look at the life of Muhammad, or the early Muslim community, or the Quran, or the Hadith, or the Sirah literature, or classical Muslim commentaries, or modern Muslim scholarship, or the spread of Islam in the world today, you will find the exact same pattern. There are three stages in the call to jihad, depending on the status of Muslims in a society. And if you understand these three stages, you'll understand Islam, 14 centuries of Islamic history, and the situation we're in right now.
Partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't.
Stage one, stealth jihad. When Muslims are completely outnumbered and can't possibly win a physical confrontation with unbelievers, they're commanded to promote peace with non-Muslims and to preach a message of tolerance. For instance, when Muhammad and his followers were a persecuted minority in Mecca, they criticized the beliefs of the polytheists, but they did so peacefully. The revelations Muhammad received during this time proclaimed a future judgment for unbelievers. Allah will one day punish those who reject Muhammad. But in the meantime, to each his own. Live and let live. Coexist. A characteristic chapter from this period is Surah 109.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
"Say, O unbelievers, I do not serve that which you serve, nor do you serve him whom I serve, nor am I going to serve that which you serve, nor are you going to serve him whom I serve. You shall have your religion, and I shall have my religion." Muslims in the West point to passages like this as evidence that Islam is inherently peaceful. But we know from Muslim sources that while Muhammad was calling for religious tolerance in Mecca, he was already planning to conquer the world in the name of Allah. He even tried to lure pagans to Islam by promising them victory over the non-Arabs. Let's look at a passage. One day, some of Muhammad's tribesmen went to his uncle, Abu Talib, because they wanted to arrange a truce with Muhammad. They wanted Muhammad to stop criticizing their beliefs. Watch what happens. Abu Talib sent for the messenger of Allah, and when he came in, he said, "Nephew, here are the sheikhs and nobles of your tribe. They have asked for justice against you, that you should desist from reviling their gods, and they will leave you to your god." "Uncle," he said, "shall I not summon them to something which is better for them than their gods?" "What do you summon them to?" he asked. He replied, "I summon them to utter a saying through which the Arabs will submit to them, and they will rule over the non-Arabs." Abu Jahl said from among the gathering, "What is it, by your father? We will give you it and 10 like it." He answered, "That you should say, there is no deity but Allah." Think about this for a moment. Muhammad's walking around Mecca, calling for peace and tolerance. But behind closed doors, he tells the Quraysh, "Join me and we'll rule over the non-Arabs," Christians, Jews, Persians, etc. These groups aren't attacking Muhammad at all, and he's already planning to conquer them. What does he need in order to subjugate the non-Muslims? He needs an army. And so he asks his tribe to convert to Islam. Now, how many times have we seen Muslim groups in the world today calling for tolerance in public, but saying something very different in private? Goes back to Muhammad. One of the key features of stage one is taqiyya, concealing Islam's true intentions in order to protect the Muslim community. This was eventually made explicit in Surah 3:28.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
"Let not the believers take disbelievers for their friends in preference to believers. Whoso doeth that hath no connection with Allah, unless it be that ye but guard yourselves against them, taking, as it were, security. Muslims aren't allowed to be friends with non-Muslims unless they're outnumbered and they feel like they're in danger from a stronger adversary. That's when Muslims are told to pretend to be friendly. One of Islam's greatest scholars, Ibn Kathir, comments, "In this case, such believers are allowed to show friendship outwardly, but never inwardly." Abu Darda, one of Muhammad's companions, put it this way, "We smile in the face of some people, although our hearts curse them."
Assalamu alaikum.
Another key feature of stage one is victim status. Muslims like to pretend that Muhammad and his followers were persecuted in Mecca simply because they were Muslims. Total nonsense. They were persecuted for antagonizing the Meccans by mocking their beliefs. We read in At-Tabari, "The Messenger of Allah proclaimed Allah's message openly and declared Islam publicly to his fellow tribesmen. When he did so, they did not withdraw from him or reject him in any way until he spoke of their gods and denounced them. When he did this, they took exception to it and united in opposition and hostility to him, except for those of them whom Allah had protected from error by means of Islam." Notice that the pagans of Mecca had no problem with Muhammad preaching Islam. They became angry when he began attacking their beliefs, and they had to put up with quite a bit. Listen to this description of what the pagans went through in their own words. "We have never seen the like of what we have endured from this man. He has derided our traditional values, abused our forefathers, reviled our religion, caused division among us, and insulted our gods. We have endured a great deal from him."
Assalamu alaikum.
Muhammad was condemning their beliefs and their values. He was causing division in the city. Not too extreme from a Western perspective. What's interesting is that when the people of Mecca responded in kind and mocked Islam, Muslims said, "Oh, they're persecuting us. What evil people attacking us because of our beliefs." Double standards. One of the goals of the stealth jihad stage is to give Islam a privileged status above other religions. But Muhammad's constant antagonism towards the Meccans did lead to actual persecution. And this persecution of the early Muslim community was the best thing that ever happened to Islam. When people heard that poor, defenseless Muslims were being mistreated, they rushed to Muhammad's aid. The Christians of Abyssinia, the Jews of Medina, and various pagan groups all agreed, at one time or another, to protect Muslims from the mean, bigoted Islamophobes in Mecca. Now keep in mind, Muhammad was already planning to conquer all of these people. But they didn't know that. All they knew was that Muslims were being persecuted, and they wanted to help. Once Muhammad and his followers had formed enough alliances and were no longer at the mercy of the Meccans, the message of the Quran suddenly changed.
Partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't.
Stage two, defensive jihad. When there are enough Muslims and resources to defend the Islamic community from attacks, persecution, or criticism, Muslims are called to engage in defensive jihad, fighting unbelievers who pose a physical or intellectual threat to Islam. After the city of Yathrib, now called Medina, agreed to protect the Muslim community, Muhammad and his followers left Mecca, and they were given permission to fight. Surah 22, 39-40.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
"Permission to fight is given to those upon whom war is made because they are oppressed, and most surely Allah is well able to assist them, those who have been expelled from their homes without a just cause, except that they say, 'Our Lord is Allah.'" Did you catch that? According to the Quran, Muslims were kicked out of Mecca simply because they believed in Allah. We've already seen that the Meccans had no problem with Muslims believing in Allah, or even with Muslims preaching Islam. They had a problem with Muhammad mocking their religion and causing division in their city. But again, Muslims needed victim status for their protection, so I guess Allah decided to fudge history just a little.
And throughout history, Islam has demonstrated through words and deeds the possibilities of religious tolerance and racial equality.
Now that Muhammad had several non-Muslim groups ready to defend him, he turned to the primary tactic of stage two, terrorism. The people of Mecca depended on the caravan trade for their survival. Anyone who had money would invest it, hoping to get back something extra to feed their families. If a caravan was robbed or didn't return, children might starve. So instead of living a peaceful life in Medina, Muhammad started attacking the Meccan caravans. Muslims launched 7 attacks against the caravans, and the Meccans never retaliated. During the 7th attack, Muslims killed a man, and they took the goods and some captives as well. The problem was that it was still the holy month when everyone agreed not to fight. Muhammad was a bit worried about this at first, but then he received Surah 2:217.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
"They question thee, O Muhammad, with regard to warfare in the sacred month. Say, warfare therein is a great transgression, but to turn men from the way of Allah, and to disbelieve in Him and in the inviolable place of worship, and to expel His people thence is a greater transgression with Allah, for persecution is worse than killing." Persecution is worse than killing. Yes, we killed a man during the holy month when there was a universal agreement not to fight, but you persecuted us, and that's worse. So don't you dare judge us. The Meccans had been trying to avoid war, but it was clear that the Muslims weren't going to stop attacking the caravans, and that Meccan trade and the livelihood of the city would never be safe. So the pagan tribes sent an army to protect the next caravan. Muslims attacked and defeated the Meccans at what became known as the Battle of Badr. Notice that the first real battle between Muslims and non-Muslims was a result of non-Muslims trying to protect themselves from Muslims terrorizing their trade routes.
Islam has a proud tradition of tolerance.
It didn't take long for Muhammad's protectors to realize that they had been duped. Muslims weren't quite the innocent victims they had claimed to be. Muhammad and his followers were far more greedy and violent than the pagans they were now attacking. But these disillusioned defenders soon learned that once you agree to support Muhammad, you don't get to change your mind. Anything other than perfect allegiance to Muhammad becomes grounds for expulsion, seizing property, enslavement, or annihilation. 3 Jewish tribes in Medina found that out the hard way.
A proud tradition of tolerance.
Non-Muslims also learned that no matter how much they disagreed with Muhammad's campaign of violence and intimidation, they had to keep their mouths shut. Muhammad began ordering the assassination of critics during Stage 2. People who spoke out against Islam or wrote poems about Muhammad were brutally murdered. And the citizens of Medina, the very people who had invited Muslims into their city, saw their rights rapidly disappearing in the name of Allah.
Tolerance, tolerance, tolerance.
Stage 2, then, is characterized by defensive fighting those who attack the Muslim community in some way. What we need to get our minds around, however, is that Muslims have a much broader definition of what constitutes an attack than anything we're familiar with. Persecution and military aggression certainly count as attacks, but as we've seen, criticizing Islam counts as an attack. Backing out of alliances after you figure out Muhammad's true intentions counts as an attack. And in the defensive jihad stage, Muslims are ordered to respond to these attacks with physical violence and terrorism.
Partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't.
Stage 3, offensive jihad. When Muslims establish a majority and achieve political power in an area, they are commanded to begin offensive jihad. Once Mecca and Arabia were under Muhammad's control, the message of the Quran changed yet again. Suddenly, Muslims weren't just told to fight against aggressors. They were commanded to fight non-Muslims simply for being non-Muslims.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
"O Prophet, strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites, and be unyielding to them. Surely Allah has bought of the believers their persons and their property for this, that they shall have the garden. They fight in Allah's way, so they slay and are slain. O you who believe, fight those of the unbelievers who are near to you, and let them find in you hardness."
Tolerance, tolerance, tolerance.
If Muslims have the military strength to expand their political power and to violently subjugate non-Muslim populations, forcing these non-Muslims to pay tribute, the Quran commands them to do so. Surah 9:29.
As the Holy Quran tells us,
Fight those who believe not in Allah nor the last day, nor hold that forbidden which hath been forbidden by Allah and his messenger, nor acknowledge the religion of truth from among the people of the book, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. This verse doesn't order Muslims to fight oppressors or even critics. It orders Muslims to fight those who don't believe in Allah.
Tolerance.
We find similar teachings in Islam's most trusted collections of ahadith. Sahih al-Bukhari, 6924. Muhammad said, I have been ordered to fight the people till they say, La ilaha illallah. None has the right to be worshipped but Allah, and whoever said, La ilaha illallah, Allah will save his property and his life from me.
Tolerance.
Sahih Muslim, number 30. Muhammad said, I have been commanded to fight against people so long as they do not declare that there is no God but Allah. Muhammad didn't say, I've been commanded to fight people until they stop persecuting us. That would be stage two. It's stage three. And the same guy who complained just a few years earlier that people were persecuting him because of his beliefs now says he's been commanded to fight people based on what they believe. Total hypocrisy.
I'm going to cut it off there. This audio clip is called The Three Stages of Jihad. You can watch the entire clip. The reason I played it so long is because most Americans don't know what jihad is or have, at best, a superficial understanding of it. I don't profess to be Muslim, and I certainly don't believe in jihad, but you need to understand the enemy, because if you don't understand the enemy, what they believe, what they ultimately want, and that is a caliphate under religious law, namely the Sharia, that's their goal. And depending on what stage the jihad is, whether it's defensive or stealth, we're sort of in the stealth stage in the United States. In other places, it's the defensive jihad. But where they dominate, they engage in the offensive jihad. And we're seeing that in many places in the Middle East. This is what our president truly does not want you to understand. That's why he calls it workplace violence or extremists. Or homegrown. No, what we're talking about is radical Islam, terrorist, jihadist. Wake up, America, know the enemy, and know what we're dealing with the current president. Donald Trump is right. We need to temporarily ban Muslims that come from countries dominated by terrorists. I think that is a prudent policy. Now, The roll over Republicans such as Romney and Ryan, yes, those are the two that those were the people that ran for president and vice president last time. Ryan wants to make a point: we shouldn't ban them based on their religion. We should ban them as to whether or not it's a security issue. Respectively, Congressman Ryan, House Speaker Ryan, I don't think you really understand what Islam is about. They're all security problems. And in America, they're engaged in stealth jihad. They will lie to you. They will smile. Later, they'll cut your throat if they have power over you. You see, that's why the establishment of both parties, including the donor base, are cracking up, panicking over Donald Trump. By telling the truth about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and drawing attention to what we're really dealing with, they threaten the owners of this country objective of open borders, including illegal immigration and legal immigration. They don't truly care which one. They prefer legal, but if they can't get that, they'll settle for illegal. Now, I want to emphasize something. Why are both political parties doing this to their own people, their own voter base, their own Democratic base, their own Republican base, American workers, American businesses that produce the goods and services that we consume, provide jobs and incomes to millions of Americans? Why are they doing this? Ladies and gentlemen, it's about power. The Democratic Party wants to turn the United States into a single-party system where they rule. In some parts of the country, namely California and some of the cities in California, some would say all of California, you have a single-party state or government. It is the Democratic Party. And that's the strategy of the Democratic Party. They want to open the borders, dramatically increase legal immigration, and their strategy assumes, and I think they're right, that at least 2 out of 3, if not 3 out of 4, of those immigrants, whether legal or illegal, will be registered Democratic voters, and that will give them a lock on the House, the Senate, and the presidency. So they don't care what the American people think. They truly don't. They're ignoring your concerns. They're ignoring your interests. They are ignoring the will of the vast majority of the American people. So they can rule, not govern, rule. That's what they're about, and they make no bones about it. Now, they don't tell you this, but that's why they're persistent. They think if they can turn all the 30 to 50 million plus illegal aliens to United States citizens, can turn them into citizens, they win. And they will fundamentally change and transform this country into a single-party system, a very socialist system. They are collectivists. They are statists. They don't believe in the individual. They certainly don't believe in the United States Constitution. And that's why Barack Obama betrays his oath, is aiding and abetting crimes, namely breaking into the country, buying documents so they can work, and then working in the country, and employers aiding and abetting this. He should have been impeached, but the Republicans were afraid of him. They didn't want to be called racist. The rollover Republicans. They rolled over. Now, instead of supporting Trump, they're still supporting Barack Obama. What's in it for the Republican Party? Well, it's what's in it for both parties is a lot of money from the donor class, the multimillionaires, the billionaires that own and control this country, that want cheap, compliant labor. That's what's in it for them, and they're demanding that they're bought and paid, as well as rented politicians of both parties, deliver on the quid pro quo, namely, we gave you the campaign contributions, now we want either a dramatic increase in the number of legal immigrants from 1 million to 2 million to 3 million, as well as dramatic increases of H-1B visas. And if you can't do that, then we want the borders to be open. In other words, we do not want vigorous enforcement of immigration law. And that's exactly what has been happening in the United States for the last 15 years under both the Republican and Democratic parties, both under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Ladies and gentlemen, wake up. We have your elected representatives turning their backs on you, and you keep reelecting them. When are you going to wake up? They don't have your fundamental interest at heart. They have become corrupted, both parties, by large campaign donations, contributions, so they can get power and keep power. They are the career politicians of the Democratic and Republican Party. They're selling you out as I speak. And if they could, and they still might try, the rollover Republicans, I hope they do, by the way, they will try to take the nomination away from Donald Trump. I don't think they will succeed, but in trying, they show their true colors. And Donald Trump should be forewarned. They will stab you in the back, because unlike you, they will get a lot more money from the big donors, the owners of this country, and the executives of the businesses that they own. That's why I said in the last show, they're panicking. They don't want Donald Trump to get the nomination. They certainly don't want him to win. And their fellow travelers, big lie media, are getting behind Hillary Clinton. because they want her elected. They want Obama to have a third term. It's all about power. It's all about money. It's all about cheap, compliant labor. And they know you're angry. They know you're frustrated. And they know that's why you voted Donald Trump. And they're afraid. They're panicking because they know Donald Trump's message is resonating. And now there's a new dimension to it. Because illegal immigration as well as legal immigration is not only a jobs issue and a crime issue and a drug issue, it is very much a security issue. And the fact that the radical Islamic terrorist jihadists want to kill you and want to take over this country as well as the countries of the world, form a caliphate under Sharia law. That's the end game. And unfortunately, our political class is either ignorant of it or they're in on it. You decide. But you're going to have to make a choice come election day. Who do you vote for? If you're a fool, you'll vote for Hillary Clinton because she's already compromised. She's already been corrupted. She's already taken the money. And she knows when she takes the money, they're expecting results. And that means open borders, more people, more illegal immigrants and refugees to this country. Many of them are future terrorists. That's what we're talking about. Your lives, your property, your happiness, your freedoms, your liberty, your Constitution, and your rights under the Constitution. We live in very much a system that has been corrupted, and it's both parties. And it's only up to the will of the American people that needs to stand up and stop the two-party tyranny and what it's leading to. And it doesn't end well, and it's up to you. And if you don't wake up and stand up, you're going to get what you deserve. Now, I have to cut the show short today. I'll continue this on the next show, because what are the Democrats and a number of Republicans as well trying to do? They're trying to change the story. It's not about radical Islam, it's about gun control, as if guns are the problem. It's people that are the problem, people that are corrupted and have dangerous beliefs and are not out to help you. They're out to kill you. This is serious, folks. You need to wake up. Many of you are not interested. You don't pay attention to politics. You don't pay attention to current events. But we saw what happened in Orlando that Saturday or Sunday morning. Imagine if it was happening in every city across this country, as well as in Europe. Because if you don't wake up and don't stand up, that is where it leads, slowly but surely, as the corrupt politicians and the people that corrupted them sell out this country and this nation. And as a result, the American people face being ruled by a caliphate under Sharia law and having to convert to Islam. I don't think most Americans want that. So I'm with Donald Trump. As much as I don't trust him, I will vote for him because that's the only choice I have. And I understand that the stakes are very high, and your freedom, your liberty, and to the extent that we have peace and prosperity is directly threatened. This is an important election, but don't let them change the subject to gun control, because that's exactly what they're trying to do. Take your eye off the ball, and if you fall for it, you have no one to blame but yourself, because you need to stand and support the Second Amendment, not these corrupt politicians. With that, let me play America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by prankpops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.